if we treat our people right and we give them all the tools to be successful, the firm will be successful.
Let's do this. Episode number 182 of Future Proof. Thanks for being here. Bill Sheridan is my name. I'm your host. Good of you to join us this week. We've got a good one this week. We're going to talk about culture, organizational culture, that is. And we're going to do it with my guest. She is Stacy Rogers, Executive Director of People and Culture at Cohen & Company. So good stuff coming up. We're going to get to that in just a minute. First, I must remind you that this week's show is brought to you by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses, dozens of instructors, unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So culture, yeah, this is why, you know, one of those, I don't know, kind of misunderstood topics, maybe a little bit. You know, trouble is a lot of those ideas about culture. They're different from person to person, right? They're not consistent. The picture that I have in my head about culture might be, in fact, probably is different from the picture in your head. So I'd love to get just a little closer to something that approximates roughly the same picture in everybody's head in the conversation. I'm not sure how much success we're going to get there today, but we might take a few small baby steps in that direction. Not easy to do because a culture, it means different things to different people, right? Here's what I think. This is what I think of when I think of culture, right? I see an organization that is united around a shared set of values, a shared identity, right? About who they are, why they exist, their purpose, so to speak. And I think that's really kind of a powerful idea, because when you get clear on all of that, you know, right? When you're clear on the definitions of your values and your purpose, some pretty amazing things start to happen. First of all, they become sort of this guiding force within your organization. When you're clear on those values and everyone in the organization understands them as well, they become as much a part of your vision and strategy as anything else. More a part of it, actually, because another thing these values do is clearly define who you want to be working with. And here I'm talking about the people on your teams. You can't achieve your vision unless you got great people working on that vision with you, obviously. And that means people who are great cultural fits, who believe what you believe, who share those values and purposes. And when you're clear on what your values are, you start to build a culture of people around those values. You start to clearly see who on your team is on board and who is not. But beyond that, you also start hiring new people based on that cultural fit. And you're building a culture of people again around those values. And that's really, really powerful stuff. So culture, values, they're more, much more than just words on a poster on a wall, right? They're really baked into the DNA of your organization, or at least should be. And they can be incredibly powerful tools in the struggle to retain and recruit top talent, which, of course, is top of mind for everybody these days. And that's always been true. But the pandemic really has thrown a few curveballs our way when it comes to culture. The ways in which organizational cultures have shifted in the pandemic's wake have been, in some cases, earth-shaking. Pretty substantially so. Here's an example. A team of authors from California Management Review, they wrote an article back in July of 2021 titled, "How Have Organizational Cultures Shifted During the COVID-19 Pandemic?" They pointed to three patterns in particular. Number one, and I'm quoting from the article here, they say, quote, "The COVID-19 pandemic led organizations to emphasize certain cultural elements and to downplay others. In particular, the five cultural elements that organizations placed greater emphasis on were flexibility, transparency, supportiveness, decisiveness, and confronting conflict. At the same time, the five cultural elements that organizations de-emphasized in response to the pandemic were customer orientation, individualism, detail orientation, results orientation, and collaboration. In short, organizational cultures in the pandemic era have generally shifted away from a high performance orientation to one that emphasizes or prizes, rather, empathy, understanding, and mutual support. So that's number one. Second, employees have experienced some of the cultural changes positively and others quite negatively. These results suggest that even if most organizations endured the transition to remote work without experiencing a significant productivity decrease, the shift has been jarring for many, with potentially detrimental consequences for cultural vitality. And third, different employee groups had very different experiences of these organizational changes. And in some cases, these differences presented themselves across racial lines. Again, quoting from the article, quote, in particular, non-white participants reported having a more negative experience of the pandemic and felt less optimistic about the future relative to white participants. One possible explanation is that non-white participants generally viewed their organizational culture following the pandemic as less transparent than did white participants, end quote. And as a result, right, a lot of the solutions to culture-related issues that we hear of frequently these days come down to better communication, more open, honest, transparent communication between leaders and employees. A PwC article recently titled How the Pandemic Can Change Workplace Culture for the Better. Author James Thomas writes, quote, while remote working may seem cheap, it could come with hidden costs to your culture. For many people, the lockdown has meant social isolation, a harm many have endured in silence, by the way. Leaders can respond by engaging with their teams and using collaborative technologies to maintain social contact. Before the pandemic, mental health awareness was sometimes a slogan. Now it is a necessity, end quote. So, I mean, we could go a million different directions with this, right? There's just a lot to digest here. And that's why I'm so glad to have as my guest this week, Stacey Rogers. She's a CPA based in Cleveland who offers a unique perspective when it comes to helping firms develop and maintain what she calls A-plus client service teams. We talked about all of this, right? Including the impact culture has on recruitment and retention, cultural landmines that leaders should avoid, opportunities that they ought to pursue. So yeah, just a great talk with someone on the cutting edge of the culture conversation. This is me and Stacey Rogers talking culture in accounting and finance. Stacey, thanks for joining me. So I'm curious, how does a CPA wind up with a title like Executive Director of People and Culture? Walk me through your career a little bit. More importantly, what happened at that moment when that switch was flipped? This strikes me as a fairly unique position for somebody in our profession.
It certainly is. And I would call it dumb luck, actually, as to how it actually happened. So it's one of those scenarios where, you find a passion for accounting early in your journey. And I found accounting when I was in high school and I loved it. And I was like, oh, this is easy for me. I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm going to do this as a career. I know I can do great things with this. So started my career as an auditor, really loved it, got experience in lots of different industries in the 10 years that I was auditing. But one of the things that I found myself incredibly attracted to internally was the time I was spending with our people, developing people, doing trainings. I got very involved in a performance management project. I created an employee engagement survey project that we were doing. And I was like, every training opportunity I had, I was in it. Like, that was where I wanted to spend my time. And so it became pretty clear to the business when they were ready to kind of start a learning and development function for the firm as it had grown, that maybe I might be the right person to do that, because not only did I understand the learner, but I also understood the business. And so I had the opportunity to make that switch 10 years into my career. And I remember distinctly having this thought in my head, They just asked me to do the things that I feel guilty about doing because I'm not billing clients. And they want me to do that full time. And I was like, this is almost a no-brainer, because when I really evaluated what I loved about auditing and what I loved about the work in accounting, it wasn't necessarily the accounting. It wasn't FASB that got me out of bed in the morning. What got me out of bed was the people that I was working with and my clients. And so I was essentially trading, you know, 35, 40 clients for, at the time, a little over 500. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about the impact that I could make on an organization that I cared deeply about and that was always there for my journey just seemed to make natural sense. And I've never looked back.
And this was about, when was this? What year did that switch?
2018 is when I went into learning and development. So I spent a little over 3.5-4 years kind of building out that department and team. And then they offered me the opportunity to step into an even broader role into kind of over the entire people and culture function, or, you know, the glorified name for HR.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about culture a little bit and people. Now, I know a lot of, you know, roles have changed a bit in our profession over the past few years. A lot of that has been driven by, you know, new technologies and things like that. But Absolutely. But culture, I think, is right in the mix there too. Is this,
yep.
And I'm curious, the work that you do, do you think this is a role that we're going to see more people in our profession play as time goes on?
Yeah, I mean, culture is, it's so critical to, one, continuing to, you know, want to do the work with these people. I mean, when I think about it, when we kind of talk about culture at our firm is, and we talk about working in the profession, is that, you know, the profession needs to shift a little bit, no doubt, when it comes to the billable hours and the requirements and how we define profitability over the course of time, because people aren't willing to work as hard for their careers as they did in the past. That's evolutionary, it's cultural, it's changing all around us.
Right.
So how do we build a model that allows for that to take shape and take place, to allow for radical flexibility, to allow for someone to still have really great development opportunities? I think public accounting offers all of those things. So one of the things that you have to think about from a culture standpoint is you still spend a lot of time with these people. I mean, any career, even if you're working a 40-hour, you know, a job week, you still spend a majority of your week with these people in comparison to your family. And, you know, like, you have to really like the people you spend time with. And family, sometimes you don't even get a choice who you get to spend time with. But in your career, you do. And so you have to foster an environment that people want to be a part of. And you have to continue to challenge them, because the work that they are doing is challenging, and you have to make sure that it remains that way. You have to be working with really great clients that people want to work with and enjoy spending time with. And you have to make sure you've got that right mix. And then you also have to make sure that people feel like they are advancing in their careers and that the time that they are spending is moving the needle forward for them. And so anytime that you're thinking about your culture and what is really, really important, is it's all of those things. It's not just, did I provide the best benefits? Are we hosting the best happy hours and spending, you know, the most money on employee engagement? It's, do we have the right clients? Are our clients treating our people right? Are our people treating our people right? Are we holding people accountable for the right behaviors? And really making sure that that continues to be the focus of maintaining a culture that people want to be a part of. And then if you can do that organizationally, and then the profession continues to find ways to attract people into the profession so that people want to be a part, you've got to have both of those things. Those things have to work in tangent with one another. And I think if we continue to move the needle forward like we have been, and I think, obviously, I think a lot of people would like to see it move faster, but I think we're making good progress. And I think that's going to be key to the future of, you know, the culture for an accountant.
Right. And you may have touched on this a little bit with that last answer, but I'm kind of curious. I think a lot of people out there have, you know, different ideas, different visions in their head about what culture actually means to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a very, I don't know, individual type of thing. What does it mean to you? How do you define culture?
So I define culture as the way that people treat one another. So how do you show up day to day, and how do you treat the person on the other side of the screen, on the other side of the wall? And how do you interact day to day? That defines the culture, because if you really think about it, yeah, you can have, I mean, anywhere you go, you're going to have benefits. You're going to have, you know, different extracurricular activities that are fun and all of that. But when all of that goes away, what do you have left? You have how you get, how you treat one another. And if your clients, and you're thinking about that from the type of client that you bring in the door to the type of person that you bring in the door, and then making sure that you have all of those accountabilities around, this is how we operate, this is how we treat one another, and this is our expectation. That is what drives a culture. Now, you can sprinkle all of the other things on top of it, but that isn't what a culture is. It's just enhancements to how that already operates. You could, but if you have a bad culture where people do not treat each other respectfully and you have all of the right accountabilities, adding additional benefits on top of that, yes, does it make it a little bit more tolerable? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But when it really comes down to it, if somebody's going to be offered a different opportunity to work in a culture where people respect and treat each other, you know, accordingly, and within this, you know, kind of, you know, honored framework, then you don't have to put all of those extras around it. And if you do, when you have that core great culture, it only enhances people's experience with it. It's just sometimes people forget really what is driving why you are here. It's not that happy hour. Yeah. It's not that extra week of PTO. It's how people treat one another and how your opportunity to continue to advance in that culture continues to grow.
That's a really good point. And I know that there are a certain number of folks out there who might see this as kind of a soft and fuzzy, warm and fuzzy kind of concept, you know, in a highly technical profession, you know, that doesn't really do it for me. I mean, tell me why they're wrong about that. What is it about culture that is so important, especially for our profession?
The core of it is people. Mm-hmm. We're not robots. We're not technicians. We're not, like, there are so many, we're so multifaceted. And if you forget that and you're like, no, you're just a billable hour, you're just a number, you're just cranking out, you're trying to meet those revenue goals, like you're doing all of those things and you're forgetting the fact that there is a person at the core of making all of that happen. We can't replace the work that we do entirely with technology. It's not even possible. And so if you, yes, can you enhance what you're doing via technology and can you streamline it and become more efficient? Always. You still have to have somebody to interpret that data. You have to still have somebody who connects that data to your client who may not understand it and tell the story. And that critical component is the person who's actually doing it. They are human. And if you forget that and you forget that they have lives outside of your four walls and you forget that they bring things into your four walls, like it or not, because they are human and we are multifaceted and we require those things, then you've lost sight of your greatest asset. And in professional services, our people are our greatest assets. And that's why this matters. And that's why we have to spend the time here.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, that phrase, trusted advisor, right? It kind of implies human connection, you know, human interaction, relationships, which ties right into this entire conversation.
Sure does.
It seems like to me, culture has maybe taken on even more meaning over the last couple of years, you know, as a result of the pandemic and where we're at. What kind of impact has COVID had on this discussion?
COVID has opened our eyes to a profession that was stuck, I think, to some degree in traditional ways of operating and traditional means by which people connect, and forced the profession to move forward quickly, to really look beyond the traditional ways in which people connect and saying, you can still be productive in a hybrid work environment where you're in a couple of days a week and you're home a couple of days a week. Actually, we saw our productivity go up during COVID because people had less distractions of all of the extra things we were trying to do in the office to engage our people. You know, they were able to really focus on that. The other thing that I think it did is that it it also brought in the human element that everybody has lives outside of our four walls. We get visuals into it now via Zoom and WebEx and all of the different, you know, kind of communication tools. We see the, you know, the impact that people had when they had to care for their children, for their sick parents. And we really remembered and we really humanized our people all over again. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I don't think we've ever been able to in the history of, you know, kind of corporations. Like, we've never had this level of visibility into people's personal lives that we got as a part of COVID.
I've never seen the whole concept of wellness, you know, come to the forefront the way it has over the last couple of years.
And wellness being also that not having that separation of work and home is problematic too, because mm-hmm. when it was all overlapping, you never had that space or that time to decompress. Mm-hmm. And mental health became such a critical component because we were all dealing with one of the largest pandemics that our generation has ever seen. Mm-hmm. And so there was all of a sudden just this grounding and this leveling of everybody. Yes, we are all in the exact same place. It doesn't matter if you're a partner, a staff, or manager, like everybody's in the same place dealing with the same challenges, but at different levels and with different dynamics. And wellness really became an opportunity for us as a profession and as an organization to reprioritize that, because that was so lacking from what we were doing in the past. And it wasn't because we didn't care, but there wasn't just that kind of ability to level set everybody to say, hey, like, we're all in this now and we all need to prioritize this. And then it allowed us to make it a priority. And then I think it's built it now into more of a regular conversation. And that I so appreciate actually about the pandemic.
Yeah. And it seems like these concepts seem to build one on top of the other, right? The pandemic leading into this whole talk about recruitment and retention and employees feeling empowered to the point where they're more comfortable leaving and looking for what they want and all that. So I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on the role that culture can play as kind of a recruitment and retention tool to help us, you know, find good people or keep the ones that we want to keep.
Yeah, I think the benefit that culture brings to the recruitment and the retention process is that we have a huge boomerang population. And for those of your listeners who maybe haven't heard that term, it's people who have spent time in your firm, left, went where the grass was quote unquote greener, mm-hmm. and then came back. And the conclusion that many of them reached was, the people and the culture are just different here. And so that in and of itself, being able to say that and to have people say that about, you know, kind of doing this whole, you know, kind of go see what's out there. And then I actually just talked to a former employee the other day and he said, you know, I was really excited to try something new, but when it all comes down to it, the culture at Cohen is clearly where I should have been the whole time. And my answer was, the grass is greener wherever you water it.
Right.
And we give people the chance to water it here and really find themselves, develop themselves. I mean, I think I'm a prime example of, I wouldn't have been an accountant my whole career. It's pretty clear now that I look back on it, but there was an environment and a culture here where people understood me as an individual. They understood my strengths. And they let me play to those strengths. And now I've created a new role for myself and for the firm that, you know, is really valuable and value add because of the environment and the culture, because of the way we treat each other and the way we support one another. And so when you can tell that story externally, which is something that we're really focused on right now, is how do I tell that story? How do I get people to understand that this is truly what differentiates us in the marketplace when it comes to us being an employer? You know, we spend so much time and money talking about how we are a great provider of the services that we do. But man, are we really struggling to talk about how we are as an employer? And I actually think that's what makes us a great provider, is that we are a great employer and we bring great people to the table. And that's why people want to work with us, mm-hmm. is because we have great people. And so that's the other side of the story that we need to start telling. And culture is how you tell that story. You have to be able to tell people the value that you bring by them being an employee for the organization. And so that's the way you do that is through articulating your culture and articulating what it is that differentiates you from the next public accounting firm, because we all know they'll do a lot of the same work. We're all doing audits. We're all creating tax returns. We're all advising our clients. But at the end of the day, we also are all people who work together to get that done. And the environment in which you do that is what differentiates you, and it what's differentiates you in your ability to serve your clients.
Well, it sounds like you guys have you know, hit on certainly at least part of the answer there when it comes to culture. Can you have any examples that you might be able to offer about, you know, from Cohen and Company about the positive impact that culture can have on an organization? What kind of things have been happening there that you say, hey, this is pretty powerful?
Oh, Bill, you're beating me a little bit to having this articulated in a way that I think we can do a better job in marketing. But some of the things that I think, so we're actually building this as we speak. And some of the things that I think stories that, you know, differentiate us is we were actually supporting remote employees before being a remote employee was cool. Mm-hmm. Because we have an environment that allowed people to do that. So, I mean, I have somebody 2 years ago, she made partner and she's been remote for 15 years. So the old adage that you can't be a partner and be remote is just, it's not real. It's right. We have an environment that allowed her to grow and develop in her career. She spent her whole career here at Cohen. And now she's an advocate for all of our remote employees. And she is a partner that really works from a place of understanding our people and their different scenarios and situations and is supportive of those and really drives that into our organization. So that's one example or one story. I think my story is actually really telling of the kind of environment and the culture where we recognize someone's strengths and we position them to allow those strengths to develop and grow and then benefit the organization in the long run. And it's also benefiting our people. So there's really that mindset of if we treat our people right and we give them all the tools to be successful, the firm will be successful. I don't have to focus on, you know, that top line nearly as much. If I spend my energy with the people and the environment that we are, I mean, we have a leadership development program that we just rolled out a little over a year ago. It's an emerging leader. It's a deep dive as a director in our organization where you get to spend an entire year with a cohort of people learning about the business, learning about yourself, learning about teams, learning about how all of those things are interconnected. And when you are a leader of this organization, how do you navigate that? How do you navigate the ups and downs? How do you navigate all of the different challenges that come with being a leader in the organization? It's hands-on. You do it side by side with your cohort. And I mean, we have coaching that's a part of that. We have different leadership that's engaged and involved. We bring outside facilitators. There's an entire session. Actually, they're in a session right now today talking about stress management and the power and the impact that that has on the individual and the team. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that for yourself, how are you going to do that for your team? Right. So just being able to kind of immerse people in that program, and we design that. Yeah. We're not, you know, it's a program that we put together based on the needs of our people and specifically designed it to meet the needs of our business. So that's a really cool program that we do and we're really proud of. But we have one of those programs at every level in our organization. Our staff get access to it. Our seniors were just at senior boot camp where they go away as a senior group and learn how to survive the role of senior. Mm-hmm. And then we prepare them for the role of manager in their second year as senior. And then we teach them about being a new manager. And then when they're an experienced manager, we teach them how to charge into the storm and be a buffalo and really face all of those challenges. So that's a huge differentiator, I think, when I look at firms our size and what they're doing to develop and prepare their people. We're doing a lot in that space as well. So I guess I could go on, Bill, but
examples. But that's fantastic. I mean, you guys are certainly got a wealth of experience there. I'm curious, any landmines that leaders ought to avoid when it comes to work in this space?
Landmines, I think at least one of the ones that I think I'm navigating right now is like, one of the things we do in public accounting is we compare ourselves to other firms of our similar size and similar shape and makeup and all of that. And at the core of it, every single one of those cultures is different. They facilitate something different. They prioritize something different. And when you start to benchmark yourself against others, you may miss some of the things that make you very unique and special because you're trying to benchmark yourself against another. Mm-hmm. And really not understanding what it is that's unique and specific to you, holding that close, really making sure that no matter what you do, you run everything through that filter first. So in our case, we have a purpose and foundational principles. Anything that falls and kind of rubs up against those that doesn't make sense, we don't move forward with, because that is so core to our culture and everything that we do. So I think that having that foundation and making sure you understand that for your firm, your organization, and your culture is foremost, like, do that first. Mm-hmm. Then when you're trying to decide from a business perspective, do I do this decision? Do I make this investment? Does it, you know, and then measure it against whether, yes, you can benchmark yourself against others, but don't lose sight of what makes you unique and special. Because I think after, you know, if you're chasing the dollar, if you're chasing the next client, you're chasing that next, you know, kind of raise and, you know, that margin and all of that. And if that's your sole focus, you're going to lose some of those pieces. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of firms that were focused on, you know, kind of those things and lost sight of that. And their culture has changed as a result. And it's because you didn't truly understand what you had that was unique and special and hold that close.
Well, that might answer my next question. I was going to ask, you know, I'm a leader who's spent a lot of time thinking about culture, but what, you know, where do I actually start? Logical first steps to doing really effective work in this area. Does it start with just kind of, you know, knowing thyself, or is it more than that?
I do think it starts with knowing thyself. Why did you get started in the first place? Understanding what were those key things that made you start the firm, whatever that is. You know, for us, it was, we wanted to make sure we could still focus on the client and that we served our people and that we continued to develop an organization that had a culture of growth and opportunity for our people, because that led to growth and opportunity for our clients. And so we held that close. And we believe that we do more than just, you know, audit and tax. We believe that we engage, we teach, we inspire, and as a result, we improve the lives of everybody who interacts with our organization. That is our core purpose, is to better our client situation, to better our people situations. And in the process of doing all of that, we're engaging, we're teaching, and we're inspiring. And that is core to the organization. And when the organization came up with that purpose, they just simply started putting up on the board what makes us unique, what makes us special, what makes us more than auditors, what makes us more than tax professionals, what makes us better than just the advisor. Like, what is it? And we were able to kind of establish that purpose. And then the only way that you can actually live that purpose is to have some very core foundational principles that, again, you use as a filter. Great people first. That's ours. Teamwork. We can't do anything without each other. You can't have a single breadwinner. You can't have a single technician. You've got to have multiple. Competitive spirit and courage. Sometimes you got to have the courage to, you know, make the hard decision or take on that risky new, you know, kind of client. And you have to foster that. And you have to also know that you're going to fall down too. That's what that competitive spirit means, is you have to be willing to win, but you also have to be willing to lose. And you have to support people when they do fall down and help them get back up quickly. And then you do that through having adaptability and optimism. Mm-hmm. Is that there, you know, we're always striving for better. We're always looking to do more and we're always looking to grow. And so if you embrace and everything that you do, you run through that filter for us, that's our filter. And if what we're working on and what we're driving towards is really, you know, kind of running through each of those areas, then we know that we're on the right path and we know we're going to trip. We know we're going to fall down, but we've got an environment to pick people back up very quickly and keep them moving forward.
And amazing, it seems to me like amazing things start to happen too when you start applying that filter to people.
Yes.
In other words, these are the people that we want these types of people to come work for us. We want to be doing business with these types of people because they match that culture, right? And that's really, I don't know, it just seems to me that that's where the magic happens.
It really is. And really kind of what we're trying to kind of shift the perspective, because I think we've all said this at some point in our careers. Oh, they're a good fit for our culture. Mm-hmm. I don't want someone who fits into it. I want someone who enhances it. Mm-hmm. So that's the shift that we're looking to make right now, is it's not about fit as much as it is enhancement. Mm-hmm. I want to have those diverse perspectives. Well, I think our foundational principles and our purpose allow us to embrace people with different perspectives, but we have to challenge ourselves because we're a little biased. I mean, we think what we've got is pretty awesome and we want to keep that going and we want to protect it, but we also want to make sure we're enhancing what we've done here. And I think we've done that over the years. And so it's really not about fit. It's about enhancing. Where can we bring unique perspective? Where can we bring new experiences that really allow us to be a better, well-rounded organization that can serve each other and our clients in a new and different way?
Well, I guess maybe my last question for you here, Stacey, is I mean, using that filter, what does the future of this profession kind of look like to you?
The future of the profession, I continue to see this as a critical profession that prepares you for literally any path that you could take from a career perspective. You get so much exposure to so many different aspects of an individual business, whether it's from a tax perspective, an audit perspective. You get to see that across multiple industries. You get to see that in multiple different ways, and really allowing technology to come into the profession and take out some of the monotony of some of the very repetitive administrative work that comes with learning and doing those things, and really getting the opportunity to spend more time learning about how we can support and move each of our, you know, respective clients forward. That consulting and that advisory skill set and that we kind of gather, and our ability to take the data and tell stories, we've always done that, but now we're going to do it in a more efficient way. And we're now going to do it with more knowledge and the ability to spend more time with our clients, because we're not, you know, kind of messing with those spreadsheets and fixing those formulas, because the technology is doing a lot of that. And I think what it does, Bill, is it opens it up for new opportunities for us to serve our clients in ways we've never imagined we could. Mm-hmm. And how we can support our clients in a new and different way and really escalate and elevate their ability to achieve their dreams, which is what, you know, we're not just there to do the audit work, I think, or the tax work. You know, it comes with the territory. But if there's anybody that knows that business as well as any one of those founders or those current executive leaders, it's your accountants, because they see it from the financial side and they're able to help you tell the story in a way that you can focus as, you know, an entrepreneur or a business leader on really what you're passionate about, which is the business. And then you can rely on your advisor to really make sure that you're doing it economically and to allow for profitability and allow you to be super successful. So I really want to see that the profession spend more time in that space and less time focused on, you know, all the pieces of compliance and the data that goes into making sure that's possible. But, you know,
that's fantastic. And, you know, it's great to see the profession spending more and more time within this conversation, because I really think it's critical going forward. And so I applaud you and the work that you're doing there, Cohen. And thank you for your time and for your insights. This has been a great conversation, and I'm glad you were here to share it with us. So Stacey, thank you.
Thank you, Bill. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Terrific conversation there with Stacey Rogers, Executive Director of People and Culture at Cohen & Company. You can learn more at cohencpa.com. That's CohenCPA.com. Or check out our blog at macpa.org for this week's show notes. Lots of related resources there. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework, it's all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting blionline.org. And that's it, gang. Have a great week. Talk to you again soon.